Joan Rankin, who has tendered her resignation as treasurer last week in order to properly focus on her new full-time job. Thank you, Joan. Paula Hillman will be filling in to cover some treasurer responsibilities until a new treasurer is found. Thank you, Paula. Respectfully, John Kuhn, representing the Finance Council of the Board. Connect yourself and others at our church retreat on Saturday, February 27th. Workshop choices include Inspired Aging, The Science of Happiness, Yoga, Meditation, and Mindfulness, Zentangle, and a TED Talk discussion on a social justice issue. There will be fun activities for children as well. All of this for $5 to cover the cost of lunch. Join in and make connections. Sign up in the foyer as soon as possible.
Albert Einstein said, "The most beautiful and profound emotion we can experience is the sensation of the mystical. He or she to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. To know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty which our dull faculties can comprehend only in primitive form. This knowledge, this longing, is at the center of true religion. Let us open ourselves today to the possibility of deep emotion. Come and let us worship together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your nearest neighbors.
We know that there is nothing in anything but a blazing beauty, that there is nothing in anything but forever's fire, that there is nothing in anything but the desire to be loved. May we kindle today that blaze. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing the opening hymn, number 131, Love Will Guide Us. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with a spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Barb Adams, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you're welcome here. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in their lives, and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for their differences. LCUUA is a recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm all people regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. On this day that symbolizes universal love, we welcome all who come here, lovers and fighters, those who strive to keep peace, and any who are willing to break that peace to build a greater community of love and understanding. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in the social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, please check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have with you today. We are glad that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
Here at LCUUC, one of the ways that we show our love for the community around us is by contributing to local food pantries every month, both financially and through the collection of non-perishables, which we donate. So if you've brought food items to share today, please bring them up now or ask a child to bring them up for you. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story with me. And today's story is called Strictly No Elephants. And it is by Lisa Manchev, illustrated by Tae Young Yu. And this is a great story for the universalist half of our heritage. The trouble with having a tiny elephant for a pet is that you never fit in. No one else in your building has an elephant. Every day I take my elephant for a walk. His is a very thoughtful sort of walk. You see the elephant on his leash with his umbrella? How do you think it would feel to take your elephant for a walk? Do you think you'd get some funny looks? Yeah. He doesn't like the cracks in the sidewalk much. I always go back and help him over. That's what friends do. They lift each other over the cracks. Today, I'm walking my tiny elephant to number 17 on my street. It's pet club day, and everyone I know will be there. So there he is, getting his elephant ready with his scarf, all dressed up. Come along, I said. There's a good boy. I coax him the last few feet. It'll be fun. But when I looked up, there was a sign on the door. I wonder what the sign said. What do you all think? And there's the sign, strictly no elephants. He got all the way there. He braved the cracks. He even put on his fancy scarf. Strictly no elephants. My tiny elephant leads me back to the sidewalk, never minding the cracks. That's what friends do, brave the scary things for you. So you can see the little elephant just walking away. Walking away through the rain. He looks pretty sad. And then they see a little girl sitting on the bench. And you can't tell it from there, but she has a skunk sitting on her lap. Did you try to go to the pet club meeting today too? The girl asked. Yes, I said, but they don't allow elephants. The sign didn't mention skunks, the girl says, but they don't want to play with them either. They don't know any better, I tell her. He doesn't stink, the girl said. No, he doesn't, I agree. What if we start our own club? You can see the elephant and the skunk saying hi to each other there. Come along, I say, making certain that my tiny elephant follows me. Because that's what friends do. They never leave anyone behind. And you can see them all there, the kids with the pet giraffe and the pet armadillo, the pet bat and the pet penguin, the hedgehog and the tiny elephant and the skunk. We can play here, one of our new friends says. All of us can play. Every kid that looks a little different, every kid that has a weird pet, they found everybody. So we can paint our own sign, and they crossed out one that said, strictly no strangers, no spoil sports, and wrote in real big letters, "Everyone is welcome here. All are welcome." And you can see the skunk crawling on the roof here. In the tree, yeah. My tiny elephant will give you directions if you need them. It shows all the children trying to find the new clubhouse. Because that's what friends do. Everyone is welcome here. I wonder what it would look like if in everything you did, you made everyone welcome. The kids with the pet skunks and the kids with the pet elephant and the kid who looks a little weird. Everyone is welcome here. So thank you for listening to my story. And if I could have my chalice lighter, who lit the chalice this morning? Come on up. And we are going to light the lantern. Just hold on to it for a sec. May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. So if all of you would please help me in singing the children to their classrooms, the song is called "For You Shall Go Out," and the words are written in your order of service. And if you all would follow our lantern bearer today and just lead them out now. I apologize in advance for today's joke. Just remember that you love me. A man moved to a tiny town in the south, and he didn't have much money. So on his first Sunday, he set out walking for the church, carrying his offering. A pig under one arm, a chicken under one arm, and a bowl of vegetables balanced on his head. He came to a crossroads and didn't know which way to turn, and he stood there wondering. A young woman approached him, heading in the same direction. "Please, ma'am," he said, "I'm on the way to church. Can you tell me which way to go?" "Yes," she said, "I'm going there too. We'll go right down this way about a mile, turn left about a mile and a half, left again about a mile, and we're there." He said, "Wait a minute. Down here, left, left again. Couldn't we save a lot of time just by walking through these woods?" And she said, "Yes, we could, but I couldn't walk those woods with you. Why, you might try to kiss me." "Listen," he said, "how could I possibly try to kiss anyone? I've got a pig under this arm and a chicken under this arm and a bowl of vegetables on my head." And she said, "Well, put the chicken in the basket. Put the basket on the ground and I'll take that little bitty pig." Yeah, it's a groaner. But since none of you seem to be carrying vegetables, a pig, or a chicken, the morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you so much for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we share together our joys and our concerns. Before the service, you're always welcome to silently light a candle at the candle table. And during the service, we speak aloud and we light candles together. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern this week, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Oh, this is Lynn, a candle of joy for our church, LCUUC, a church that helps us learn to love better, love past our disappointments, kind of into a place of acceptance. And if you're visiting and want to learn more about how we do this, please join us today for an orientation from noon to 2. Lunch will be served.
Hello, this is Heidi. And we have a great joy from yesterday. Devin, Brianna, and I completed our first run walk. It was really, really cold. Snow pants were required. But the kids completed the entire thing. It was great. And then we went ice fishing. And Brianna caught her first fish. So it was a good day.
Hi, it's Paula. Best wishes and safe skiing to all the members that are going to be skiing the Birkebeiner next weekend.
Hi, I'm Sheila, and just want to say that I have a joy that our church is hosting Family Promise this week. So starting this evening, we will get guests through next Saturday, and I'm just really grateful that we are extending ourselves like this to people that have no home to live in right now. And I'm also grateful for everyone, all the members that have worked so hard in the program.
I'd like to light a candle of joy. August just walked into the nursery willingly without any coaxing. So I'm really happy to be here with all of you without that concern on my mind.
This is Gus. My nephew, Matthew, who lives in Marietta, Georgia, has von Hippel's disease, and he has lost the use of his legs, one of his arms. He's blind and has a number of other organs that just aren't working right. Anyway, he started to lose a feeling in his good arm. So if everybody could just send their positive vibrations down there to Marietta, Georgia, I'd appreciate it.
This is Yvonne, and I recently had my gallbladder out and didn't even realize it was a problem. And I am so grateful to modern medicine and so many things we take for granted, all the body parts that actually do keep working, and for the many people that reached out. And thank you for your love.
This is Mary. This is Mary, and I just, this is probably kind of dumb, but like Owen and I were watching a basketball game this morning, and he looked at the clock, and he's like, we got to go to church. And I looked at him, and I said, do you want to go this morning? He goes, yeah, I want to go. And I'm just like, dude, like, that's so cool.
Hi, this is Chris. I have a joy and a concern. My joy is that tomorrow Scott and I celebrate our 11th wedding anniversary. And the concern is that because we decided to probably celebrate and go out for dinner today and do some fun things, that our Christmas tree is going to not come down. We'll have to wait.
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those concerns which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
Words on love and compassion from Thich Nhat Hanh. When we come into contact with the other person, our thoughts and actions should express our mind of compassion, even if that person says and does things that are not easy to accept. We practice in this way until we see clearly that our love is not contingent upon the other person being lovable. We really have to understand the person we want to love. If our love is only a will to possess, it is not love. If we only think of ourselves, if we only know our own needs and ignore the needs of the other person, we cannot love. People deal too much with the negative, with what is wrong. Why not try and see positive things to just touch those things and make them bloom? In true dialogue, both sides are willing to change. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
This was the second reading. From When I Think About Love, I Think About This by Christine Bissonnette. What does love feel like in your body? I've started asking people this question, but I've never answered the question myself. What does love feel like to me? I'm afraid to answer this question, because I think I may have mistaken love for obsession once or twice. I think I've mistaken it for the right thing said at the right time, or for the suppressed thing that, thank God, I didn't say out loud. I've mistaken it for sex and flirty texts, and I've mistaken it for a look that made me believe they saw me. I've also mistaken it for that thing they called me out on that I didn't think anyone else could see. But they did. So I thought they loved me, or that they could. And maybe that if they did, I could love them back. What does love feel like in my body? It feels like fear. It feels anxious and impatient. It's an experience I want to compare with yours to see if I'm doing it right, because I'm so scared that I'm not, and that I'm mistaking it for something else again, and I don't want to do it wrong. I hate being wrong. Love, to me, feels perfect, and I'm so afraid. I'm not perfect enough yet. And if I'm being completely honest, love is so difficult for me to understand because more than anything, I'm most afraid of being loved. The responsibility feels heavy in my throat, and I don't want the pressure of being the recipient of a word that I've mistaken for so many different things. And I don't want to be loved by someone who only sees the parts that I remembered to refrigerate overnight and not the mold. And still I smile because I want love to happen all at once so that I can stop thinking about it. I don't want the buildup. Sometimes, and I hope you can relate, I just wish that I was there already and that the stories could be added later. I want to read the book backwards. This reflection is about the many times I've retreated mid-jump and hit my head on a stone I missed in my periphery, right when I thought I was safe. But maybe that's just love. Maybe love is the most dangerous feeling we can allow ourselves to experience in our lives. And if that's the case, then I'm surrounded by bravery. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 298, Wake Now My Senses. We're going to sing verses 1, 3, and 5.
The sermon today is called Love Changes Everything. And talking about love in a postmodern Unitarian Universalist church is an interesting challenge. Because we come out of a tradition, the Universalist side of our tradition, which says love is what mattered. It was different from the Calvinism of the time, which said that people were born into original sin, damned and going to hell if they didn't get it right. And Universalism raised its head and said, you are born into love. That there is no sin too great for a loving God to turn you away forever. What a difference that was from preaching at the time, which was designed to terrify you into heaven. The Universalist said to you instead, you are so loved. If God is not present in your life, it isn't because God left, it's because you did. But we've moved beyond that. We've become a postmodern religion. And we're not always sure how to talk about love. Most of you get exposed to the idea of Hallmark love or erotic love on an almost daily basis. Oh, look, he went to Jared. Every kiss begins with K. Buy her a diamond. Give her some candy. Give him some tools. It means you love them, right? We can send each other cards on the internet. We don't even have to go to the store anymore. It's hard to talk about what we mean when we talk about the theological idea of love, because all of these things play in. So when I was growing up, there was a traditional folk wisdom, and I'm betting most of you have heard this at some point. We'd all be standing around on the playground, middle of February, and someone would look out at all the white and say, you know, Eskimos have 53 words for snow. Now, sometimes it would be 100 words or 78 words, or it didn't matter. We were lying. We didn't know. But all of us would agree. You'd watch our little bobbleheads go like, yes, we all knew this. Eskimos have 153,000 words for snow. Of course that was true. They could talk about snow that was soft and fluffy. It wouldn't make a snowball. They could talk about the snow that you could make into an igloo. The snow that fell on your wife's laundry 10 minutes after she put it out. Because if you live with snow every day, it makes sense that you have words to talk about the different kinds. Even as children, that made sense to us. So 30 years later, a friend had an almost 2-year-old grandson, and I spent a lot of time wishing he had 53 words for anything. Because to him, everything was a doggy. And if any of you who have grandchildren can probably identify, he saw a cat going by outside, doggy, wanted a hot dog for lunch, doggy. His favorite stuffed bear was a doggy. My shoe was a doggy. There could have been an 18-foot, 6-legged lizard monster go outside, and he would have yelled, hey, it's a doggy. And this wasn't a problem until the days he sat sobbing inconsolably, crying for a doggy. And we handed him everything we could think of, food, toys, the guinea pig, my shoe, never the right doggy. So when I sat down to write this sermon, I thought about that little boy crying for something he couldn't describe. I thought about all the ways we talk about love. Everything's a doggy. It's all love. I love you. You love me. I love chili. Love hurts. Love is the answer. Love your neighbor. Love changes everything. Most of the time, we're not quite sure what we're talking about. One word for 53 things, or 100, or 75. So today is Valentine's Day. It's all about love of some kind, right? We've got that. Candy, pink hearts, dinner out, some candles. This is the romantic love piece. But real romantic love should have two sides. Being in love with the person and loving someone. So to clear this up a little bit, being in love is a state of existence. It comes into being. There was a time before you were in love with that person, And it's possible that there will be a time after you were in love with them. Doesn't invalidate the love in between. It involves hormones and usually physical behaviors. It can be blind and goofy and fun and terrifying and furious making. Being in love is a sensual act. It is tied to your body. The sight and smell and sound of the other person pleases you. It causes your heart to beat faster. You're interested in what they say. They do something to you. You love them because. Ann Landers said, this kind of love is friendship that's caught fire. Quiet understanding, mutual confidence, sharing and forgiving. Loyalty through good times and bad times. It settles for less than perfection and makes allowances. This kind of love says, I could stop loving you, but I choose not to. This is in love with. This isn't what we're talking about when we talk about theological love. So when you hear quotes that say, God so loved the world, when you hear things that say, love your neighbor, when you hear calls in Hinduism or Buddhism to love, we are not talking about being in love with. Being in love with fluctuates. Ask my husband sometime how much he loves me after I've forgotten to rinse my dishes for the 17th time. Loving someone, though, loving someone as a theological position, as opposed to being in love with someone, is a recognition of yourself in them. It's a recognition of interconnection. It is not, I love you because. It is, you exist, therefore I love you. There is no other possible position. That's why so many religions take this as a thought. This is not small. This is a commitment to recognize they are you and you are them. And you love them because they exist. There is no time before they were loved by you. And there is no potential for existence in which they cannot be loved by you. This is what Judeo-Christianity is talking about when you hear things like love your neighbor. This is what humanism and atheism are talking about when they say recognize that we are all part of one web. You're hurting yourself. You're not hurting something else. Theological love is a relationship you have with other human beings, with the divine as you know it, and with your world. This is like being in love scaled up. This is being in love made whole. And the particular metaphor that you use for this isn't important. It differs religion to religion. So you can see all of humanity as members in the body of Christ, or as points on a web of life, or as parts in an interconnected natural system, or as points on a mathematical equation. The point is, it's one equation. It's one interconnected system. It's one body of Christ. One over soul, if you will. And every part, as it is valuable to the system. Doesn't mean every part is good. Doesn't mean every part is perfect. Every part is needed. Every part is valuable. And it's difficult at times because we are called to love everyone. It only works if you love everyone, not just the people we are in love with. I've been reading something called Spiritual Theology by a Catholic priest named Father Jordan Amon. And he's been reading St. Thomas. And he says, St. Thomas begins his treatise on charity or love by saying that it's friendship between God or the divine and mankind. And like every friendship, it implies a mutual love based on the communication of some good. Love is a supernatural habit infused by God onto the will, by which we love the divine for itself above all things and ourselves and our neighbor for that love of God. In universalist terms, we're all part of one universe, all part of the web, and we recognize that it is good that the other parts exist. This is not a world made up of I. This is a world made up of a million shining points. We make a choice as part of our basic humanity. This is what it means to be human. To be in positive relationship to the rest of existence as a whole. And to the other shining points, including ourselves. We show love. Theological love is active. It's behavioral. It has to be engaged in. You don't just fall in love with existence. You don't have a hormonal surge that says, wow, the world. You may, but that's a different issue. Theological love says, I will be in a relationship with you. I will see you as you are. I will see you as you are, and I will risk the fear of allowing you to see me. I will recognize you as an extension of my own body and soul, and I will see myself as part of yours. So this is twofold. I have value. That you look at the person you think of as marvelous and wonderful and your hero and say, and I am part of you and you are part of me. I am good enough. In fact, I am damn marvelous. And that's a challenge for some people, that it hurts to say that. There's always somebody better, right? If you didn't exist, they couldn't exist. You are part of them, and they are part of you. And a religion that is based on love is the cure for a lot of the wounds of our time. Cuts and bruises that are based on the factionalism within our country and across other countries, across faith traditions. When we fight and kill each other over our different beliefs, this is not love. Reverend Mellon Kennedy says, universalism asks, do you have the courage to open your heart to the aching world? Do you have the courage to love? And the Sufi poet Rumi provokes us, risk everything for love if you would be a human. If not, leave this gathering. Love is risky. Love opens the heart. Love reminds us that we are not enemies by nature. You typically don't go to war against your own big toe or declare jihad on your spleen. We're all part of one thing. One creation, many pieces, with all of our mistakes and all of our imperfections. So what does this have to do with the idea of being born again? And those words, nobody panic. I'm speaking in metaphor. I promise. Some of us have come out of traditions where being born again is very much expected. Some of us have had no exposure whatsoever. In order to give love as a theological position, you have to be willing to receive it. We just talked about that. Because you can't give what you do not know. So I want you to think for just a second about some point in your life where you felt absolutely, completely, and totally loved. Not loved because, but completely loved. Maybe it was with a parent, maybe a partner, maybe a grandparent. Maybe that kindergarten teacher who could not wait to see you. But when you were with that person, when you were with that experience of nature, in that moment you felt totally accepted and valued for exactly who and what you were. No need to hide. And in return, you loved that thing, whatever it was, a person, nature, an experience. Loved because you existed. How easy was it to lose that experience again? To go from feeling that valuable, that perfectly loved, to forgetting what that felt like. Maybe the next time you got yelled at work, the next time you screwed up at home. But that moment of awareness, when you recognize that you are loved completely, that you are loved in a way that someone will never stop loving you, no matter what you did, just for existing, no matter what, that's foundational in understanding theological love. For some Christians, it's more straightforward because that awareness comes in thinking about Jesus dying as a sacrifice for all sin, for all time. Of his being sent by God just to fulfill that role. Even if no one else in their life ever loves them, they can understand love through that mega model. Other religions deal with it a little differently, but all have that same idea, that moment of awareness that you are loved. The moment of understanding feels like a new birth. In that moment, you are born into that oneness. In that moment, you're born into that web of life that is already pre-existent. You're simply now recognizing that you are a piece, feeling your own value. Some call it awakening into the body of Christ. A humanist might say it was the moment you became aware you were part of an interlocked system, really part, a vital part. But in that moment, love changes everything. You have to be awakened into knowing love, born again into knowing love, and then you can share. A teacher in India named Mother Raitasha said this in 2012. You have asked, does love exist? And I tell you, yes, love exists. But you who seek outside yourself for love look in the wrong place. For already are you love. Look instead for places where you may give love, for love is not real until it is given. And in giving, know that the things of this world are limited and temporary and blind. Give to them which is unlimited and eternal. Anything less is not love. And because some people were having trouble understanding, she told a story and she said, a man died and went to heaven and knocked on the gate and an angel appeared. And the man wanted to enter, and so he said, I have been good. All the rules and regulations of my religion I have followed. I have prayed the prayers and fed the poor, and on holy days you would find me in the house of worship. I was a good husband to my wife. She lived in a fine house and wanted nothing. To my children I gave the best education I could buy. I was a generous man. I deserved to enter paradise. The angel asked one question of the man. He said, who have you brought with you? Who else will enter paradise because of you? And the man answered, none, and no one. And the angel said, go back. Learn how to love because no one enters paradise alone. And someone said, I don't understand. He did everything right. Surely he was religious. And the mother said to him, the lamp is not lit so that the lamp alone may be seen. If you haven't had that moment of rebirth, of understanding that you have a place, a beloved place in the universe, begin your work there. Find the value of your own life. Understand that. What does love feel like in your body? And when you know that you have worth and love, share. Ask yourself, who am I bringing with me? Who knows that they are loved because of me? Doing good things without love is like painting the doghouse and letting the dog inside die. Love yourself first. Recognize you're part of a greater whole and love it too. And then love your neighbor. All the rest is just the doghouse. And love changes everything. Amen.
May the fire of our love live on in our hearts and shine out to the world. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 1014, Standing on the Side of Love, in your green hymnals.
Love doesn't make the world go round. Love is what makes the ride worthwhile. Go in peace to love and serve the world. Peace, and may it be so.